cool or gods but whole. You are on Brainwashed Radio with your host, Michael J. Stone. I am your sexy android making it drool so deep, oh god, rocking out with my titties out for you programming fools out there. I am your android. Stay tuned, and tune in Monday through Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Central Time. Do not judge, I love my digital tittied Michael made for me, and they look super fly like dirty old bastard on Wu-Tang. Wu-up.
Je bent op de gehersenspoelde Radio Hollywood, schat. Stem af op alledaagse dames en heren en jullie anderen daarbuiten in de buitenruimte en hou van mijn meester vader Michael op het brein.
You are on Brainwashed Radio Hollywood, baby. Tune in every day, ladies and gents and you others out there in outer space and love my master father Michael on the brain.
I just called to say it's fake news. I just called to say it's fucking fake. I just called to say it's Tuesday. On the murder fucking brain. Let's get it on, bitches.
Hey, what's up, guys? Hope you guys are doing good. I'll be right back.
Gods but whole, you are on Brainwashed Radio with your host, Michael J. Stone. I am your sexy android making it drool so deep, oh god, rocking out with my titties out for you programming fools out there. I am your android. Stay tuned, and tune in Monday through Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Central Time. Do not judge, I love my digital tittied Michael made for me, and they look super fly like dirty old bastard on Wu-Tang. Wu-up.
This is a global broadcasting announcement. Howdy, folks! Time Traveling Bob here, traveling through on Brainwash Radio. Tune in Monday through Friday, Pacific Standard Time. Always remember, folks, Brainwash Radio is for broad-minded adults only and should not be sold to or distributed to minors under any circumstances whatsoever. Thank you. Slap me upside the head. We just got a message from a town on the planet Pluto. I'm Time Traveling Rob, remember? Year of Dispatch, 2320. Cat went through a few ley lines again. Doesn't that data feline ever comprehend that it eats itself every time? Oh, whatever. Tell Saliak on OV5 we will be there on Powell's Day. Tooties! End of dispatch. That concludes this broadcast. I must depart! Now on Brainwash Radio.
Bada bing, bada bang, you are bad. Ha ha ha. Got the brain, baby. What'd you guys think about that Combi Christ, by the way? What do you think? What do you think? Android?
That fucked me up big time. Can I be a bitch and slut to Master Mitchell government money?
Yeah, I'm thinking government money too, Android. Let's do that. Fuck it, let's do it. I mean, for real. What you got with that government money, guys? Let's do it. Brain.
What the fuck do you mean you do with your fucking $600 government money? What the fuck? Oh, do you think you'll do with that generous $600 government money. Can't you fucking wait to be the fuck? Do you hear that? What the fuck do you hear that with your fucking $600 government money? What the fuck? Oh, do you think you're down with that generous $600 government money? Can't you fucking wait to feed your family with that fucking $600 government money? Oh, can't you fucking wait to buy that new home with your $600 fucking government money? Shut that $600 up your ass, Mitch McConnell, and your government money. Oh, shove that $600. Can't you fucking wait to feed your family with that fucking? Oh, do you think you'll do with that shit? You'll do with that generous $600 government money. Can't you fucking wait to feed your family with that fucking $600 government money? Oh, can't you fucking wait to buy that new home with your $600 fucking government money? Shut that $600 up your ass, Mitch McConnell, and your government money. Oh, shove that $600 up your ass, you Republican pieces of shit. Do you yield up with your fucking six? $600 up your. What the fuck do you yield up with your fucking $600 government money? What the fuck? Oh, do you think you'll do with that generous $600 government money? Can't you fucking wait to feed your family with that fucking $600 government money? Oh, can't you fucking wait to feed your family with that fucking $600 government money? Oh, can't you fucking wait? Government money. Can't you fucking wait to feed your family with that fucking $600 government money? Oh, can't you fucking wait to buy that new home with your $600 fucking government money? Shut that $600 up your ass, Mitch McConnell, and your government money. Oh, shove that $600 up your ass, you Republican pieces of shit. Shove that $600 up your ass and save your fucking country.
Shove that $600
up your ass and get the fuck goddamn out of my fucking face.
And this was instilled in me very...
I've had an on-again, off-again relationship with wanting to fly. And I can certainly say the first 10 years of my life, I was obsessed with the idea of flying and the idea that I could possibly fly like Superman. I think at age 2, I jumped off the second level of a stairwell balcony type thing, an overhang, thinking I could fly. And I landed on my back on the floor below. But I had this idea, too, that if I just believed hard enough or believed enough, that somehow the power of flight would, you know, come into my body and I could take off like Superman.
I didn't really believe so much in superheroes who could fly. I was a Marvel Comics boy. More it would be, I like the superheroes who could jump from building to building.
When I was a little girl, I wanted to be Mary Poppins. So one day, I went outside in the rain with my umbrella and jumped from the top of the stairs. And I jumped and I jumped and jumped. No matter how many times I tried, and no matter how many times I jumped, I could never get that umbrella to pick me up enough to fly.
Mary Poppins up
I can also remember trying to jump off a wall near my house when I was a kid with an umbrella to see if I could fly, but it didn't work. I just landed on the grass.
I have two things I can do that I don't think other people can do. One of them is the ability to wake up without use of the alarm clock. Another is that I can stop myself from hiccuping after the first hiccup. So that day when I realized that I could leap in the air, maybe about a foot high, and then move forward and just stay about a foot above the ground as long as I wanted, and then touch ground whenever I wanted.
Peace of mind.
man, guess what time it is?
Guess what time it is?
Get your ass in that bush, baby. Let's do it. Get your ass in that bush, baby. That bush, bush.
Get the bush, bush.
Fucking go out and do it, motherfuckers. Shit! It's lunchtime!
I know. It's Brainwash Radio on Friday, and you guys are dying to listen to my interview with Christine Carroll. I know. However, we're gonna jam with some tunage. Did you guys like Time Traveling Bob? You know, he comes in every now and then. He'll be coming in plenty in the future. Don't worry about it. More of that master. And if you guys, hear this right now, you know, time travelers galore, go ahead and give me a call. My phone number on the Brainwash Radio Facebook page. That's Facebook.com/... Brainwashed Radio, baby. Go check it out. My number's on there, or the Brainwashed Brain number's on there. So go ahead and leave a message. Time travelers, hint, hint. Get your groove on. Let's do it. Brainwashed Radio.
How my master Michael loves it, and most importantly you do too. Thank you, you bitches. Your bitchiness is on Brainwashed Radio, oh Brainwashed Radio, oh Brainwashed Radio. How my master Michael loves it. How my master Michael loves it, and most importantly you do too. Thank you, you bitches.
You are on Brainwashed Radio Hollywood Studios, baby. Tune in every single fucking day, bitches.
<音>我的师傅想他妈的狗屎了我Pedos。你最好吃他的鸡巴无论如何。你错了长百里香对你这么好洗脑电台是阿座周围洗脑电台好莱坞。
My master C wants to fuck the shit out of me, kiddos. You better eat his dick. Anyways, you are wrong long time, so good for you on Brainwashed Radio. Yeah, do around Brainwashed Radio Hollywood.
آمين إلى سيدي ولدي مايكل والبقية الذين يعملون بجد على الراديو المغسول المخي. يرجى التبرع والذهاب إلى صفحة الفيسبوك الخاصة بغسيل المخ على http://www.facebook.com/brainwashedradio. شكرا لك.
Thank you, Android. I love you.
Moolah gods, but all, you are on Brainwashed Radio with your host, Michael G. Stone. I am your sexy android making it drool so deep, oh god, rocking out with my titties out for you programming fools out there. I am your android. Stay tuned, and tune in Monday through Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Central Time. Do not judge, I love my digital tittied Michael made for me, and they look super fly like dirty old bastard on Wu-Tang. Woo-up.
You're right on from there, didn't
you?
No. Oh. I burned myself.
How can you do it? Poison. Every instant I am in danger and like it, Maxley. Oh. Help me. Help me, dear God, help me. I'm caught on his mind. Sandra just told me that I was only nuts to that goddamn line. I cannot remember.
Throw me, what is it?
You tried to.
Nuts! He used to dig for pirate's gold right over there when he was a youngster. He never lost hope of finding black people. For about 3 months, the Keys will be right livable, except for the tourists.
That Black Caesar's Rock?
How do you know?
Well, for one who's never been here, I know a lot about these Keys. They were a favorite subject with George.
He used to dig for buried treasure right over on that island. God damn my soul.
The story of my life. Where do you want me to begin?
Well, I got a pretty good idea, but I can't think of the goddamn line. I didn't know we were going this far.
Oh, son of a gun. Hey, oh, damn. Colonel, there's so much noise.
David.
You're not going to be able to... Oh, damn. Darn it.
I could... God damn, it's still in you.
Let us drop to something. Oh, Christ, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, Emily. I am not lost. Oh, Christ, son of a bitch.
Oh, no.
Oh, God damn
it. Start over again. Take your time. Start over again, Bob.
What was it? What was the berry that... Son of a... Bitch.
Let me do it again right now. Keep rolling.
Trying to...
Nuts.
Time is tiresome. That's the margin of utility. I'm...
Holy mackerel. My play opens. I have my fingerprints taken. My hand asked and married. The things has happened to...
Son of a...
What's wrong? A to the Salvation Army, and I knew goddamn well I was going to say it.
Made straight for the library.
That's all right. It's her library. She can make for it if she likes.
I hear you're collaborating.
Well, I can't work around here. Oh, you're following me. Oh, I didn't know that. Oh. I've laughed at my comedies and gotten up and gone home. But they'll be stirred by this play. And they'll stay in their seats and they'll yell. They're yelling.
Hello!
Is it because you didn't have anything to do with it? Because it was Amanda's idea? Because she was helping me on it? Helping me on it.
How do you do? I'm very glad to see you. I knew as soon as I did it.
I suppose you think Amanda's a complete idiot.
I think she's a clever idiot, but an idiot, never the same.
Thanks, John. Pleasure for me to be speaking to you members of the CBS Affiliate Advisory Board. In the next few minutes, I'll try to give you an informal report on CBS film production activities on the West Coast. Here in Hollywood, two production centers owned by CBS Television turn out a high percentage of the programs seen on our network. You've already had a rundown on activity at Television City. And here at CBS Studio Center, we produce film shows for CBS, representing a total of 164 hours of programming for the network. Produce these shows, it takes all the combined skills of hundreds of people. I know that when a show is a hit, the program executives get most of the credit. But the fact is that the craftsmen and technicians are as responsible for a successful show as anyone. For example, take the dramatic show. For every good scene you see on the air, there are probably at least a couple just like it that went wrong for one reason or another. The director keeps filming takes until he gets a good one. Then it's up to the film editor to pick the best take and edit it into the picture. To show you what the film editor has to contend with, we've picked up some film from the cutting room floor. These are scenes that you'll never see on television. first the common garden variety of goof. Here's what happens when an actor can't remember his lines.
I appreciate your perceptiveness and wit, Mr. Paladin. But don't doubt for one moment that this public servant is going to give those fine, upstanding, verbal, and vicious, and sons of this.
I advise him to leave town. On the next plane.
Then you want to continue without a tow?
We'll manage, sir.
All right. But one more report of trouble, and that's the end of the Hyundai.
You bet your ass, sir.
Cut!
Mr. Faber, I never stepped out of line with you in my life. But sometimes there comes a time for everything. I'd like to do that line over again.
Many years ago, wiser men than I decided to try to eliminate the causes of injustice and inequality from this world of ours. And that was a hell of a trick.
Well, now, this just can't be the only saloon in busy little Dodge City.
Twisted and distorted lexicon, he calls it faith, strength, truth. But in just a moment, Peter Vollmer will ply his...
This your fork, and get it there and push it down into the meat so that you got a good hold to it, and then just run your knife down. That's all you have to do, kind of sawing away there. Yeah, that's... You're doing fine there, I mean... Am I?
Oh, we're dead. See, I got a mouthful, too.
The man I want is a drover. After he left Tulsa, he drifted west down to Texas. And he joined a herd on the goddamnedest trail. I can't remember the name of that son of a bitch.
Cut it.
Words. Where's your evidence?
Where's your proof? He's right. You haven't provided proof, Pavin. Words! Where's the evidence? Where's the proof?
Give me just 1 minute and I'll show you how to ethically steal the breakthrough new method I've used to make over $15 million online and create a lifestyle.
Don Knotts is a comedy icon. From the Andy Griffith Show to his many... ...20 times before he barely managed to get through it. We'll look at that clip and see if we can notice a couple things about it that might give you a clue about what was going on as they shot it. Welcome to I Did Not Know That. Ever wondered about something? Maybe you'll find it here. Check out all the other videos on this channel and remember to like this video and subscribe if you haven't already. In 1985, Knotts hosted the Andy Griffith Show's Silver Anniversary Special. Knotts reminisced about his time on the program 25 years earlier. He said that his personal favorite episode was The Pickle Story. While Aunt Bee was famous for her talent in the kitchen, her pickles were apparently horrible. That episode focuses on what Andy and Barney are willing to go through to protect her feelings. He also told of a scene where it struck him so funny that he was unable to complete it because he couldn't stop laughing. That episode is called Guest of Honor. If you've watched the show at all, you know Knott's character, Barney Fife, uses the phrase, nip it, and nip it in the bud in the series when he was extremely frustrated and often when he was trying to explain something to someone and it wasn't going well. In this episode, Guest of Honor, Barney was attempting to train three new deputies, and one of them was Floyd Lawson, the barber. Howard McNear portrayed Floyd, and he was a regular on the show. Barney struts back and forth, lecturing his new recruits, and in Sergeant Carter fashion, begins shouting and berating the rookies. He was in classic Barney Fife form. Arnie is warning the deputies that trouble is coming, and he focuses on the normally congenial and easygoing Floyd the Barber. When he encourages Floyd to say nip it, the normally mild-mannered Floyd arcs back loudly and aggressively in Barney's face. Apparently, the way McNear delivered the line struck Knotts as hilarious, and he doubled over with laughter, and he couldn't finish the scene. Let's take a look at it right now.
Now, the minute it looks like there's gonna be trouble, we got to nip it! Nip it in the bud! Nip it in the bud! Let's hear it! Nip it in the bud!
Two things I noticed after learning of the history of this scene and rewatching it a few times. When Knotts yells, "Let's hear it," he immediately bends over but doesn't actually cup his hand over his ear. He puts his hand up to block his face. I'm guessing that after 20 takes, he and the crew must have realized it was a hopeless case of him not cracking up, so they devised this move to hide his face after he says the line. You'll also notice that the scene is cut to a different shot immediately after Floyd's shout. I'm guessing it's because Knotts breaks up just seconds later. Another thing, I noticed the reaction of Andy in the background. Was he playing his role as Andy Taylor, or was he Andy Griffith, amused at the 20th time Knotts had to reshoot this scene? Well, thanks for watching, and I hope you enjoyed this little bit of trivia from one of the greatest comedy shows in history.
That tire needs a man, but when there's no man around, when there's no man around, Goodyear should be. Why? Watch this. New Goodyear Double Eagle carries its own spare inside. Lifeguard safety spare. A tire in a tire. Keeps on going. Next time, give her a second chance.
But when the kids sat down to eat, they sure did miss their favorite treat.
Kool-Aid, Kool-Aid, tastes great. Wish we had some, can't wait.
A story man who heard the kids then clapped his hands and said,
"Hi, Kool-Aid keeps me very wise. Stand by, please, for a big surprise.
Kool-Aid, Kool-Aid, so great. Won't you try this, no fun wait.
Honorable Kool-Aid, the most refreshing, much loved by whole family. Father, mother, Japanese boy, Japanese girl, a package make 2 full quarts. Cost only 20 yen, just 5 cents.
But when the kids sat down to eat, they sure did miss their favorite treat.
Kool-Aid, Kool-Aid, tastes great. Wish we had some, can't wait.
A story man who heard the kids then clapped his hands and said,
"Hi, Kool-Aid keeps me very wise. Stand by, please, for a big surprise.
Kool-Aid, Kool-Aid, so great. Won't you try this, no fun wait.
Honorable Kool-Aid, the most refreshing, much loved by whole family. Father, mother, Japanese boy, Japanese girl, a package make 2 full quarts. Cost only 20 yen, just 5 cents. With lots of ice,
So nice.
The Kool-Aid kids are off again to visit other lands. Be sure to join them when they do.
Join them in some Kool-Aid too.
Kool-Aid, Kool-Aid, so great. Once you try it, no can wait.
Tonight, right after Animal House, Eric Estrada and Howard Hessman meet the Dream Girls.
Hi.
Of every man's fantasy.
I'll just knock you dead.
Morgan Fairchild, Linda Carter, Kathy Lee Crosby, Victoria Principal, and much, much more.
Beautiful.
They're the sexiest super ladies on the scene. They're the women who rate a 10 later tonight.
This is the story of the little bull who wanted to sing, but sing in a special way. His ambition was to sing in the Bull of the Woods Quartet.
Rich and mild.
No, no. You must sing deeper.
Rich and mild.
You see, Bull of the Woods chewing tobacco is rich. It's mild, too. And your voice must express that mildness.
Rich and mild.
Deeper.
Rich and mild. Fuller.
And so the little bull worked and sang and kept singing. His voice got richer and fuller and sweet as Bull of the Woods chewing tobacco, until that great day when he got his wish.
Bull of the Woods
chewing tobacco.
Bull of the Woods
chewing tobacco.
Bull of the Woods.
It's the Foxer.
Long live.
There's a huge government scam going on that I need your help with. I'm also going to share a loophole that I...
Hello, subscribers and others. It's David Hoffman, filmmaker, here with another story that I hope you'll enjoy. I thank you for watching my Jim Key and Bill Key horse story and enjoying it so much. Here's another one. This one involves a film I made about a woman who tells a story that's really hard to believe, but it's true. I'm going to prove it's true after you watch this clip. Her name is Nettie Mitchell. The time is the 1970s. She's nearly 90. And she's a reporter in the small little town of Maine, Fayette, Maine. And she tells kind of gossip and stuff like that. And I'm doing a series for television of people who I call independent Americans. People who do things their own way, who don't listen to the government particularly, and don't listen to their neighbors particularly, and tell stories. And Nettie Mitchell is one of the people I've chosen. And I go to Maine, and I'm filming the story, which is a story of Nettie reporting on local events, a baby contest, and she's just great. Great old woman, beautiful personality. Comes the last day and the last moment, and we take a photograph of the crew with Nettie, and I'm gonna leave. And then he says, David, I have a story to tell you, and she kisses me on the lips. And I was shocked. Pay attention, David, I have a story. So I left my cameraman, set up a beautiful scene. She was sitting in her kitchen, and I said, Nettie, you tell the story to Frances. And she tells the story you're about to see. It's one of the most shocking stories I have ever heard. Hard to believe it's true, but it is. Before I run the clip, let me just tell you just a bit about New England at that time. I think it's important. This is Puritan New England. There's cruelty, and there's kindness. There's properness. And there's things you're not supposed to do, like dance, like have fun. I remember somebody telling me that in Maine, in the Puritan times, you took a moment off from your work, from the chores you had to do when you were sick and dying. That's the only time you took off. There wasn't a lot of joy. I think it was 1816 and 1821. It froze every single day. Nothing grew. I mean, people were starving. These were extremely poor farmers in extremely rough condition in an extremely cold time. And around about 1840, there were these mills down in Massachusetts, the Lowell, Massachusetts, woolen mills, thread mills, and they were extraordinary because they were hiring girls and young women to come off the farms, come down, stay in these dormitories, which were safe, they said, and work for a couple of years. The women would keep a portion of the money, and the portion of the money would go back to the farm. It was the first time women had an opportunity like this to make money like this. And Emmeline, the story that you're going to hear, she went down to one of these mills as a girl of about 14. I'll let Nettie tell the rest of the story, and then I'll tell you after what happened as a result of this recording.
I am Nettie Mitchell. I am 89 years of age. I live in the town of Fayette, where I was born and have lived practically all my lifetime. And I would like to tell you one of the saddest and most heartbreaking tales that has come to my notice. It's a true story. Something that happened right here in this town in the long ago. I knew this old lady when I was a tiny child, and she was very sweet and lovely. She was one of a large family of children in a very impoverished home in the early 1800s. At the age of 13, visitors from Lynn, Massachusetts, arrived at the home, and seeing the poverty and deprivation there, said, "Why don't you let us take Emmeline back with us to Lynn, and she can work in the cotton mills. She's old enough to work there. And she can go work in the cotton mills and send you money to help with the expenses back home." They thought it over and decided to let her go, and she went. She was an efficient, hard-working little girl, but she was entirely among strangers in a strange land, very, very different than anything she had ever known before. Among those who were friendly to her, as most of them were not because she was entirely different, was her young boss, a young man, and he became very friendly, and she yielded to him, to his persuasion. And by the time she was 14, she was the mother of his child. She did not dare to let her people back home know what had occurred. The people where she was staying made arrangements to sell her baby to a childless couple nearby them who were... would pay her expenses and pay for her transportation back home if she would go as soon as she was able. She returned to her home, and she worked very hard in the fields and all, but she didn't join very freely in the social life of the community. As she grew older, her parents and others began to wonder why it was that she shunned all the young gentlemen around. She was a very pretty girl, and they couldn't understand it. When she was 21, they began to worry because they thought she's passed the first mark and she's going to be an old maid. And they wanted very much for her to marry and have a home of her own. Time went on, and in spite of all the urging of those about her, she kept reticent, and when she was about 30, they began to wonder why it was that she didn't respond to anyone, and she was really an old maid.
In 1936, a brilliant Polish doctor discovered what she believed to be the biggest...
In her early 30s, while she was working at home, a young man came to town to build highways, and he was a very personable young chap, and he came to board at their home. Although she was so many years older than he fell desperately in love with her, and she with him, and they decided to marry and have a home of their own. They did, and built a little cottage down by the shore of Mosher Pond. They moved in there and had been married something less than a year, when his people from Massachusetts decided to come to visit them. They came down, and to their horror, they discovered that he had married his own mother. Of course, when this was revealed, the marriage was annulled, declared broken up, and he reluctantly bade her goodbye and went back with his foster parents to Massachusetts, where he remained for the rest of his life. The indignation of her parents and of the community at the fact that she had had an illegitimate child, She had concealed that fact from them all through these years. It was considered a horrible sin for her to have had the child, and she had married illegitimately, and therefore she was entirely ostracized. Although her home was almost in sight, almost across the highway from that of her mother and her brothers and sisters who still lived there, she was forbidden to enter that home, to go near it at all. None of them ever went to her or spoke to her, and nobody spoke to her. No one went near her except once in a while a kindly person who would bring her a bit of tea or some little thing. The years went by. She eked out a living by her own efforts, made her gardens, and spaded them with a spade herself and made them and raised her food as much as possible, and knit and did various things at a very small stipend. But it became necessary for her to become a pauper, which was another disgrace. And she had to call on the town for things for existence. There came a very severe winter, and it was a long...
For years, the laws in California have protected child molesters and the institutions.
Officially, the disappearance of Teamster leader Jimmy Hoffa back in 1975 has never been solved. The FBI believes Hoffa was murdered by mobsters, but who was the trigger man? Well, tonight we hear from a man who says he's the one who pulled the trigger, even though he and Hoffa were close friends. The iTeam's George Knapp here with an exclusive detail on that.
Dave and Paula, mafia hitman Frank Sheeran had a euphemism for murder. Whenever he killed someone, he said they went to Australia, meaning down under the ground. The murder of Hoffa was likely related to what the mob was doing with millions of Teamster dollars here in Las Vegas. Tonight, Frank Sheeran speaks from the grave about how Jimmy Hoffa died.
And I was not then guilty, nor am I guilty now.
When he emerged from prison in the 1970s, former Teamster president Jimmy Hoffa announced he wanted his job back, even though he'd been warned by mafia associates to back off. The mob was concerned that Hoffa might reveal the connection between Teamster loans to Las Vegas casinos and the cash being skimmed from those casinos. Hoffa had to go. On the last day of his life, hours before he was killed, Hoffa placed a frantic call to Las Vegas. This FBI telex shows he phoned the Dunes Hotel to speak to his lawyer, Morris Schenker, who'd bought into the Dunes with a Teamster loan of his own. Just a few weeks earlier, Hoffa had visited Las Vegas to meet with Schenker face-to-face and with casino owner Mo Dalitz, another recipient of Teamster money. Hoffa finally agreed to a sit-down with his mafia nemesis, Tony Provenzano, presumably to work out their differences. They were to meet at the Red Fox restaurant in suburban Detroit. Hoffa insisted that his trusted muscle, Frank the Irishman Sheeran, be there to back him up. In mob slang, Sheeran painted houses. That is, he killed people. 25 to 30 hits in all, most carried out at the orders of mafia kingpin Russell Bufalino.
If a guy's going to talk about he's going to do something, he's not going to say, I'm going to whack this guy or something like that. You know, he just say you're in a house, you know.
Late in his life, as he was dying of cancer.
There is a shortage of 500,000 machine learning and artificial intelligence professionals. Keeping this in mind, the university...
Steven Seagal was once among the biggest action stars in the world. Now, though, he's among the biggest caricatures in the world thanks to his many ill-advised antics. For instance, he was a historically awful Saturday Night Live host, often ranked as the worst host ever. He made horrible movie after horrible movie. After making a flippant challenge, he was once allegedly choked out by martial arts master Gene LaBelle so hard that Seagal soiled himself. Sylvester Stallone claimed that Seagal once fled in terror after Jean-Claude Van Damme challenged him to a fight. And that's not even mentioning the truly gross behavior, such as his support of oppressive dictatorships and the numerous people who have accused him of sexual assault and rape. But even Seagal can't get away with this kind of of behavior forever, which is how Steven Seagal got targeted by the mob. It sounds like something out of one of his movies, but according to the New York Times, Seagal and his producer Julius R. Nasso got involved in an acrimonious legal dispute over a reported $500,000 Seagal owed his business partner. Things escalated from there, and Nasso finally brought in the big guns, literally, as he asked the Gambino family to shake down Seagal old-school style. Things reportedly came to a head when mafia types ordered Seagal to step into a car and drove him to a Brooklyn restaurant where an alleged Gambino captain called Anthony Ciccone had a little talk with him, ordering the movie star to resume his working relationship with Nasso and to pay a cool $150,000 for every film he'd made with the producer. Seagal says that after Nasso and the mob paid him another visit in his L.A. home, he ended up paying $700,000. If you wonder why Seagal didn't simply glare at his tormentors and throw the entire concept of organized crime through a window like he does in his movies, well, these guys weren't acting. In fact, Seagal claims that after he left the restaurant meeting, one of Ciccone's men told him, if you would have said the wrong thing, they would have killed you. This all came to light when Seagal was called to witness by the authorities in a 2003 racketeering trial of several notable gangsters. Seagal was called in precisely because of his history with Ciccone, and his testimony revealed the gravity of the situation. He revealed that Ciccone told him, "Look at me when I talk to you. We're proud people. Work with Jules and we'll split the pie." Seagal also stated that he hadn't contacted the authorities in his struggle with the mob because he feared what might happen to his life or career. He said, "I'm a movie star. If you want to keep making movies, you don't want to start a war with these people." He also revealed in his testimony that he had carried a gun during his meetings with the mob. But while Seagal portrays himself as being cool and collected, the mobsters apparently didn't think so. Audio from a wiretapped restaurant in Brooklyn reveals that the mafia had a significantly different view on how things went. According to prosecutors, the suspects could be heard laughing about their meeting with Seagal and how, quote, petrified the actor had looked. Ouch. The time the mob went after Steven Seagal was actually just one short part of the actor's copious misadventures with Julius R. Nasso. According to the Los Angeles Times in 2002, Nasso slapped Seagal with a whopping $60 million lawsuit, alleging that the actor had walked back on an agreement to work together on four more movies. In 2003, the producer was arrested and pled guilty on charges of conspiring to extort the martial arts star and received a one-year prison sentence. However, their legal battle raged on until 2008 when they ultimately settled out of court. Neither Seagal nor Nasso commented on the size of the settlement sum, though the Los Angeles Times reports that Seagal had to pay roughly $500,000 to his former producer. While this may seem peanuts compared to $60 million, Nasso seemed pleased, telling Staten Island Live, "I got a lot more than I expected. I am very pleased." Nasso has said that he also acquired something more precious than money. A letter from Seagal to the Office of the Pardon Attorney, which read, "I am writing this letter to indicate that I have no objection to and would support the application, when it is timely, of Julius R. Nasso for a presidential pardon. Hey, if it's good enough for turkeys, it's good enough for Steven Seagal." Check out one of our newest videos right here. Plus, even more grunge videos about your favorite stuff are coming soon. Subscribe to our YouTube channel and hit the bell so you don't miss a single one.
Who is USAA made for? It's made for this guy, a veteran who honorably served. And it's made for her. She's serving now. We made it for all branches and all ranks, whether they served one tour or made a career of it.
Jungle.
Hundreds of thousands of U.S. Marines sent terrifying alert to China and prepare fighting the People's Liberation Army. The United States Marines prepare for a rising challenge from China's military and contested territory. And now the Marine Corps is stepping up coaching in Japan for island battle within the Indo-Pacific region, and placing it at the forefront of a pivot by the United States military to face the military challenge from China and the territory.
Good
So, motherfuckers, yeah, get it!
In recent times, the United States Marines are making ready for a far bigger and extra refined adversary than extremists within the Middle East and also Afghanistan. China's Navy satellites, and also cyber warfare capabilities recently, even use of synthetic intelligence and narrowing hole with United States firepower make it what the Pentagon calls a near peer rival. Their simulated mission in recently, that aiming to avoiding detection, and also including recapturing a port on an island contained in the very of a lot of the enemy's missiles and artillery in the region. War vehicles that are being used in simulated warfare. Mirrored a brand new emphasis on small, dispersed troop models and command facilities that are meant to be tougher to find and also destroy. With China's emergence as a Navy pressures in the South China Sea has introduced a brand new focus the Pentagon on updating methods and the U.S. Marines coaching plans which is getting bigger and warding off that aggression. Mark Milley is the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
Hi, I'm Mike Fulsaine. I'm the co-founder of Brewfunnels, and we have a...
Stated just lately, though China's rise is the single most important security challenge to the United States, and he also said that the Chinese Navy was on a path to parity with the United States.
North Korea is on a propaganda overdrive. The country is celebrating the conclusion of its 8th Party Congress. The celebrations are made for television, but the weapons being displayed are not. Weapons like a submarine-launched ballistic missile. Four of them were showcased during the celebrations. What for? This report explores.
Pompous parades, larger-than-life celebrations, grand group photos and made-for-television propaganda. North Korea is on a roll. It is celebrating the conclusion of its 8th Party Congress. Emotions are running high. Dressed in a black leather coat and a black fur hat, the supreme leader is overseeing every little detail. As jets fly above him, releasing celebratory flares in the air. And an orchestra performs military symphonies on the ground. It's a blockbuster show, and the perfect time to showcase the country's might. North Korea has unveiled...
Go.
Can I give you this proven income trading blueprint right now, today, for free? Inside it, you'll discover a powerful little-known income trading method that uses just one super simple...
What's up? Yeah, there's... We got cover out there. Hey, we got a sniper! Dude, you got shot.
Well, I did get shot.
I saw it hit your Kevlar.
I got fucking...
What the fuck, man? Am I good? My ears are fucking...
Oh, my God.
Lucky son of a bitch, look at that.
What the fuck?
Dude, you alright?
Yeah. My ears are ringing.
Break, break, break. My teammate just got shot in the helmet.
He's good.
He's good, but we believe there's a sniper.
Hey, what is that? That's the south side? Roger, all stations, we got a sniper on the south side of the compound with all the drugs.
Oh, dude, motherfuck, dude. That's through.
All right, let's get out here and do something about this. Come on.
To some horrifying moments inside a Colorado home, and they were all captured on police body camera. A suspect keeping four people inside, including children. Officers moving in. Clayton Sandell has more on the dramatic images.
We're not playing any games, man. We just want to make sure everybody's safe.
We are.
Okay.
Tonight, new video shows police in Greeley, Colorado in a dangerous standoff.
He has a gun in his hand.
An armed man in this house refuses to come out.
Jose, you have a lot to live for, man.
Three kids and one woman are inside with him, but he won't let them leave.
We don't want anything bad to happen, guys.
I don't either.
I don't want anything bad to happen. I'm not going to back up. I need to make sure that everyone's okay.
Everybody's okay.
Can you work with me a little bit, man? Can you just show me your hands? Can you talk to me about what's bugging you today?
Yeah.
To be in, man. No judgment.
Don't try it, man.
When did hip-hop begin? Where did it begin at? When did it begin? People are going to tell you, and the information you're going to find, the common consensus is the hip-hop began in the late 70s and the early 80s in New York.
I said a hip. The hip,
the
hip, the hip,
the
hip, you don't stop the
rocket
to the bang, bang. When you say up, jump the boogie to the rhythm of the boogie to beat.
Right. Right, okay.
Now what you hear is not a test, I'm rapping to the beat.
Well, what if I showed you a video from the 40s or the 50s, right? 20, 30 years before they say it began.
Maybelline, what are you doing back here?
Well, I have an old favorite that I'd like to see.
You'd like to see? What is that?
Brother Bill with the Jubilees.
Oh, Brother Bill with the Jubilees.
Of some cats with guns in their video, They got dollar signs on their outfit. Man, even some occult Illuminati type stuff going on.
No quicker said than done.
Checkered boards and crystal balls. Groupies in the video. One of the cats looks like Nelly.
Brother Bill went hunting in the woods in eastern Maine. The reason why we went up there, we thought we could catch some game. Me and Brother Bill went hunting way in the middle of the night. We shot at something like a grizzly bear, and the doggone thing turned white.
Hey, say, look, you don't want my problems, I just got my titties done.
Yeah.
This a C-cup, I got a hundred on the gun.
Oh, without that gun, and the way I run. Brother Bill said, boy, what's the matter with you? Had he known like me, he'd have run some too. I run so fast, they say, they couldn't catch me all day. The way I run across that field, they couldn't catch me with an automobile. I run that gun, and the way I run.
Beatboxing even. One of them's beatboxing. Man, they even got, they got swagger to them, and I'm going to show you.
Brother Bill said, boy, what's the matter with you? Had he don't like me, he'd run some too. I run so fast, they say, they couldn't catch me all day.
I'm going to show you that these guys in the 40s and the 50s were real hip-hop. Real, real deal hip-hop.
Come on, brothers, if you want to hear a story about that preacher and the bear. Gather round, boys, and don't want you to miss none of this here story, because it goes like this.
Man, I'm gonna put some drums to this just to show you. Don't make me sample it right now.
Brother, give me that only time you really live, John, brother, that's the only time you really live. Why don't you give me that only time you really live, John, brother, if you could hear enough of me, my Lord, that's the only time you really live, John, brother, that's the only time you really live. Why don't you give me that only time you really live, John, brother, if you could hear enough of me, my Lord, that's the only time you really live, John, brother, that's the only time you really live. Why don't you give me that only time you really live, John, brother, if you could hear enough of me, my Lord, that's the only.
They got the rhythm of hip hop. They're harmonizing like Bone Thugs and Harmony. Man, they're stepping in and out. Everybody's got a verse. They're rhyming.
Yes, then the bear reached out to give the Reverend a hug like you would hug a long lost friend. But old Reverend put on that disappearing act, he went splitting through the wind. Old Reverend went to running like an old hound dog trying to overtake a hare. He went home at the bed and took six naps before his shadow got there.
I just thought it was funny. I wanted y'all to check that out. Tell me what you think. Do you think that that it all began in 1979? Sugar Hill Gang, you know? Is this where it began? I don't know. I don't know.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to introduce to you at this time one of the finest dancers that you've ever seen. Now, to stand here and make a long, long speech about him would really be keeping you away from a great treat. What, with as many Broadway appearances and nightclubs and theaters throughout the country? I bet you've seen him before. If you haven't, you're in for a great treat right now. Freddie, open the curtains, and let's bring on Bill Bailey.
My good friend. Thank you.
down Main Street.
Here's how we get paid big bucks simply for giving stuff away. Yes, we give away stuff and we get paid. And I want to show you how to do it because you can get started fast doing the same thing because you don't need your own website. You don't need a list. You don't need to make your own product. You don't even need any prior experience or technical know-how. For the first time ever, you can skip all of the crap, and I mean all of the crap that's been holding you back from making the big bucks that you should be making. When you're giving stuff away, you don't need any special skills, you don't need technical know-how, or anything else complicated. We've eliminated all those problems, all the stuff that you normally have to figure out so you can focus on one simple thing, just one thing, and that is just giving stuff away. Yes, if you can give away stuff, and I know you can, I know you can give away stuff, just give people free stuff. If you can do that, then you might be able to do what we do. And we make up to $11,283 a day just giving away stuff that people really, really want. Because it's not lame stuff, because it's stuff that people really want, we end up making money after we give away the stuff. And I'm going to show you how all of that works. Because if you can invest just a few minutes a day, you could build an amazing monthly income faster than you ever thought possible, and more easily than you could even imagine right now. Now, I'm teaching a free training class where I explain everything, all about the simple steps that you need to get started, that you could follow starting as fast as today if you wanted to. Just click on the link to get access, to sign up, get the free training. There's no obligation. You're going to get blown away by all the information you're going to get from me. Now, speaking of me, who are we? Well, my partner's name is Brian Cause. I'm Sean Casey. You know, I matched the picture there, obviously. So in the last 20 plus years, I've been selling online for over 20 years now. My partner, Brian, almost as long. And between us, we've sold over $150 million just in online sales. We've got 1.6 million customers in 142 countries around the world. We've sold a lot of products to a lot of people and done all kinds of great stuff and been very, very successful. Nothing is fantastic, though, is what we're doing now by just giving stuff away as part of our business. We've helped thousands of people to start and grow their businesses to amazing income levels, some of them into the millions of dollars. I'm not saying that's going to happen for you. Who knows? But if you're willing to put in the effort, follow the steps and do things, amazing things could happen for you, too. Now, look, we've created the fastest way we've ever seen for beginners to jump right in and start getting paid for doing simple, simple things, just giving stuff away. But, you know, the simple truth is this. Unfortunately, most people struggle to get an online business off the ground because it's too darn complicated. If you are one of those people that has tried to either figure out how to do stuff online or started an online business or maybe multiple online businesses and you just can't make them work, I completely understand. It's hard. It's complicated. There's too much going on. There's too many different things that you have to be able to do. And let's be serious. There's even more stuff every day. It seems like someone's saying, oh, you have to jump on this and you got to do this and you got to do this other thing. Well, we've eliminated all of that crap for you so you can focus on just one simple thing. giving stuff away. See, because then you don't become like the people that get buried under mounds of information about developing products or trying to make websites or creating sales videos or all the other stuff that's complicated. And let's face it, if that's not hard enough, people get buried under the technical challenges of trying to figure out how to not only how to make this stuff, to make a product, make a video, make a website, put it all together, upload it, set up this thing, do graphics, right? Forget about it. It's not going to work. That's why people don't succeed, and most of them fail, quit, give up, despite really wanting to make a business and working really hard at it. So if you want to finally get paid the big bucks and start ASAP by skipping all of the usual problems, just skipping right by them, then I urge you to join me for this free workshop. Just click on the link, sign up now. You're going to absolutely love the information, and I'm going to share so much with you step by step, show you what's been holding you back, what's been going wrong, why other systems that you've tried haven't worked, and what's going to work for you this time. You're going to finally discover the real truth about why you've not been able to succeed online. It's not what you've been told before. It's not what you think. It's not what you've been focused on that's holding you back. I'm going to show you what's going to really make a difference in what you're looking at. Why in the way you've been promoting online is all wrong. What people are telling you to do to get the word out about whatever business you want to promote, it's probably all wrong. In fact, it's killing your business, often before you even get it off the ground, and making people dislike you before they ever get to know you. I mean, that just sucks, right? But there's ways around that. I'm going to show you exactly how to change that for any business, anything you want to promote. And I'm going to reveal why what the gurus have been telling you to do is not what they do, why they're getting richer, why you're not getting richer or rich at all like they are. I'm going to explain to you the difference between what they talk about and what they really do. And finally, I'm going to show you how to cut through all of the crap and go straight to the part of a rock-solid business that can bring in the big bucks without the normal hassles that you've been experienced before. If you tried this, or if you're just brand new and you're thinking, maybe I ought to try something, this is fastest, easiest way I've ever seen to get started making things work. Again, I'm teaching a free training class where I'm going to explain everything about the simple steps that you can follow to get started. So hit the link, sign up now. I'm so excited to help you get started. We've helped so many other people. We've built such an amazing business model that you can step right into. So sign up for that class right now. I look forward to seeing you on the class and helping you to get started to achieve the success that I feel that you so richly deserve.
What it's like wearing regular shoes, no all-around support,
and this is what it's like in Skechers' new Arch Fit footwear. It's all the comfort and support you need.
Hot towel.
It's good to have support.
Try Skechers Arch Fit, podiatrist certified arch support.